Welcome to Richard Ellis Talks with Richard Ellis. Richard's going to take the next few minutes to share some great words of hope, insight, humor, and relevance. In today's lost and searching world, that's something everyone desperately needs to hear. Speaking of that, we'd love to keep this conversation going with you anytime through our website, richardellistalks.com. In fact, there's so many ways to connect with us from there that you really need to check it out for yourself, richardellistalks.com. But right now, let's go ahead and get things off and running with today's talk. Here's Richard Ellis.
The title of today's message is Hair of the Dog. Let me read you a definition of this. An alcoholic drink that you drink to cure the pain in your head that was caused by drinking too much alcohol the night before. If you're hungover, there is a drink called Hair of the Dog, right? One recipe I found said gin and hot sauce. Of course, that'll give you all kind of other problems that you'll forget, you know, that you're hungover. Now, let me give you a little, I found out where this Hair of the Dog came from. The usage came from, in the past, people believed that if you were bitten by a crazy dog, the injury could be made better by putting hairs from the dog's tail on the injury. So somebody started this thing, a dog bites you, you get tail hairs, put it on the injury, and that's going to make it better. Now you say, well, that's preposterous. Well, honestly, I think drinking to solve drinking sounds pretty preposterous too. And some of the remedies that I found, you know, you drink Gatorade, you can take an Alka-Seltzer Plus, you can, if you've got some liquor by your bed, if that's where you passed out or hung over, you drink a little bit, it's because you're dehydrated, but if you start drinking to cure the drinking, then that just postpones your pain. Sleep is a good thing, I hear. The best way to cure, to avoid a hangover, is just don't drink, or at least don't get drunk. Now, I'm not up here today talking about drinking. That's not what I'm talking about. And we'll move to the next thing. But it does seem a little crazy, the dog hair thing. It does seem a little crazy, the drinking thing. But let me tell you something else that seems a little crazy. How ridiculous is it to think if you get someone killed, their blood could be used to secure your pardon and cover your guilt? So you get someone killed, and then someone says, well, but if you can get some of their blood, that can be presented to the judge, and he'll let you off. Now that sounds crazy. Now, let me tell you kind of where we're going today. If you read your Bible very long at all, you're going to discover that there is some crazy stuff in this book. And usually, what God tells you to do is completely opposite from what the world is telling you to do. So you say, well, I don't think I know what God's will is. Then find out what the whole world is doing and turn it on its ear and go the other way, and you're going to be pretty close to doing what God wants you to do. Right? The whole world says, you know, sex outside of marriage is okay. You say, well, I wonder what God thinks. Maybe marriage is a place for it. The whole world says, you know, getting drunk is okay. And God says, didn't say don't drink, but the getting drunk is out of line. Now, my experience, I've never been drunk, but I've been hungover before. Now, how do you get hungover if you've never been drunk? Because sin leaves a hangover. You ever wake up the morning after a day of sinning, a night of sinning, completely sober, and it just hits you what I've done, where I've been, what I've thought, who I was with, whatever your deal is. And now you are hungover emotionally. You're hungover spiritually, and you need a cure for your hangover. Now, I'm going to tell you, that kind of hangover, nothing but the blood will fix that. Go to Old Testament. Let me read you a quick story about bizarre things. 2 Kings, let's jump over here and read this really quick. 2 Kings chapter 5. And there's a story in here that kind of helps explain this category of doing something foolish. 2 Kings chapter 5, let's start with verse 1. Now Naaman, commander of the army of the king of Syria, was a great and honorable man in the eyes of his master, because by him the Lord had given victory to Syria. He was also a mighty man of valor, but a leper, had leprosy. And the Syrians had gone out on raids and had brought back captive a young girl from the land of Israel. She waited on Naaman's wife. Then she said to her mistress, "If only my master were with the prophet who is in Samaria, for he would heal him of his leprosy." Now, what did that girl just do? She was a witness. She testified to something she knew was true and spoke it out loud. And Naaman went in and told his master, saying, "Thus and thus said the girl who was from the land of Israel." Then the king of Syria said, "Go now, and I will send a letter to the king of Israel." So he departed and took with him 10 talents of silver, 6,000 shekels of gold, and 10 changes of clothing. Then he brought the letter to the king of Israel, which said, "Now be advised, when this letter comes to you, that I have sent Naaman my servant to you, that you may heal him of his leprosy." Now, what kind of letter is that? It doesn't matter how many gifts you send with it. The guy can heal it or he can't. And it happened when the king of Israel read the letter that he tore his clothes and said, "Am I God to kill and make alive, that this man sends a man to me to heal him of leprosy? Therefore, please consider and see how he seeks a quarrel with me." He's trying to start a fight. So it was when Elijah, the man of God, heard that the king of Israel had torn his clothes, that he sent to the king saying, "Why have you torn your clothes? Please let him come to me, and he shall know that there is a prophet in Israel." Then Naaman went with his horses and chariot, and he stood at the door of Elijah's house, and Elijah sent a messenger to him. Now watch the technicalities here. Elijah does not even go outside. This guy has brought gifts. The king has been made afraid by the request to make him whole. They say, "Go to Elijah," they go to Elijah's house, and Elijah sends someone outside, a messenger to him, saying, and this is all he told him. The messenger is sent outside, tell Naaman to do what? "Go and wash in the Jordan 7 times, and your flesh shall be restored to you, and you shall be clean." That's the recipe. That's the remedy. That'll cure the hangover. But Naaman became furious and went away and said, "Indeed, I said to myself, he will surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God and wave his hand over the place and heal the leprosy." No, not on those terms. You're doing it my way. You will come out here and say some words and wave your hand over my leprosy and make me well. That's how I want to be healed. Now, how silly do you think we look to God? "Well, this is how I want it done. I want so-and-so this way. I'll write a check, make a gift. But this is how I want it done." And God goes, "You know, excuse me? Who do you think you are? We're doing it my way or no way." "Well, I don't like your way, God." "Well, then try your way. How's that been working out for you?" "Not so good." You say, "But God's way is foolish. Everything he asked me to do doesn't make any sense. It's backwards. I feel silly. It can't work." Keep reading this story. "Indeed, I said to myself," he went away and said, "indeed, I said to myself, he will surely come to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God and wave his hand over the place and heal the leprosy. Are not the Abinah and the Farar, the rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel?" I'm not getting in the Jordan anyway. If you're going to put me in a river, put me in these other rivers in Damascus. "Could I not wash in them and be clean?" So he turned and went away in a rage. And his servants came near and spoke to him and said, "My father, if the prophets had told you to do something great, would you not have done it?" What if he had told you to do something noble, something great? Would you not have done it? "How much more then when he says to you, 'Wash and be clean'?" So he went down. So then Naaman realizes, okay, I do want to be made whole. I'll do what he said. It depends on how desperate you are. You say, "Well, I'm interested in a little bit of God. I'll come kind of a sip and see, a little happy hour. I'll come to your happy hour. And kind of Jesus on the rocks, I'll do a little taste test. And you know what? I'm really not interested in that." Something sooner or later, if you are praying or if someone is praying for you, something is going to happen in your life where it is not going to be any more sip and see. It is going to be go, it is a "God help me, and whatever you tell me to do, I will do that." Now, what is it that God has asked you to do that is so silly, so foolish, so inane that you will not do it? And he's given you instructions. Maybe he said, "You know what? You need to go tell so-and-so this is going on in your life." "Well, I'm not telling them. They're nobody. Give me somebody important. I'll go tell them." That's not what he told you to do. Follow the instructions. Look what happens. This servant girl gets his attention. So he went down and dipped 7 times in the Jordan, followed the instructions according to the saying of the man of God, and his flesh was restored like the flesh of a little child, and he was clean. And he returned to the man of God, he and all his aides, and came and stood before him and said, "Indeed, now I know that there is no God in all the earth except in Israel. Now, therefore, please take a gift from your servant." But he said, "As the Lord lives, before whom I stand, I will receive nothing." And he urged him to take it, but he refused. And you read the story, see how it unfolds. The guy was made whole. Now, let me tell you where I'm going with this. God says, here's the deal. You are lost. You are unclean. You are dead in your trespasses and sins. And I am going to send my son Jesus, born of a virgin, going to come to earth, live sinless life, die on a cross, shed his blood, be buried and raised from the dead. And if you will put your trust in him, put your trust in that blood that was shed for you, and I'll give you verses in a minute about that, then you will be saved, bought back, redeemed. I'll fix it. And we say, craziest story I ever heard, not interested. I want to see a miracle. You don't get much bigger than getting saved, folks. Getting saved is a pretty big miracle. Think of how hungover you were before you met Jesus and what a little blood of the Lamb did for that. Now, let me read you the verses. Let's start with Matthew 27, and I'll try to move left to right through the New Testament here. Matthew 27, this is at the crucifixion, and we're going to be talking about some of this over the next few weeks. Jesus is brought to Pilate. Pilate wants nothing to do with this. Even his wife says, don't have anything to do with this just man, this guy. They're crying out for Barabbas. Verse 22, Pilate said to them, what then shall I do with Jesus who is called Christ? They all said, let him be crucified. Then the governor said, why? What evil has he done? But they cried out all the more, saying, let him be crucified. When Pilate saw that he could not prevail at all, but rather that a tumult was rising, he took water, washed his hands before the multitude, saying, I am innocent of the blood of this just person. It is interesting what he refers to. Blood is something that is referred to all the time. Innocent blood. You've shed innocent blood. I'm not guilty of his blood. Because if you take the blood out of something, it is going to die. Life is in the blood. And that's why you say, well, what's all this emphasis in the Bible about the blood of the Lamb and Christ's blood and all? It seems like a gory mess. And if you don't drink his blood and eat his flesh, you know, you say, well, I don't like all that. You know what? He didn't ask us what we liked. He didn't like sin either. So my mess made another mess. Your mess made another mess. We made the mess in that mankind, Adam starts this mess and we perpetuate it. And so someone's got to clean this mess up. So keep reading here. They cried out all the more. He says, I am innocent of the blood of this just person. You see to it. In other words, you're going to have to take care of it. And look at what they said. And all the people answered and said, his blood be on us and on our children. If you're ever going to pray something, that's what you ought to pray. Not in the way they said it. What were they saying? We'll take full responsibility for the execution of this guy, but that's what you should be praying for yourself and your family. His blood be on us and on our children. If you don't get your family, yourself, everybody you know covered in the blood, you're not going to make it. Go over to Romans chapter 5. Romans chapter 5, and let's jump in here at verse 6. This is Paul writing to the church at Rome. Romans 5, 6, for when we were still without strength, in due time Christ died for the ungodly. For scarcely for a righteous man will one die. Yet perhaps for a good man someone would even dare to die. But God demonstrated his own love toward us in that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. Much more then, having now been justified by his blood, we shall be saved from wrath through him. Now you say, well, I still don't get it. What is this blood thing? Let me just give you some advice. Even if you don't get it completely, get you some. One of the other perplexities of life to me is, and I don't know who figured this out first, if you get bit by a snake, get some snake venom and that'll fix it. Who in their right mind would do that? Put snake venom in a person who has just been bitten by a snake. But as it turns out, the anti-venom for the venom is from the snake itself. So you say, well, I'm not doing that. Then you know what? You're going to die. That's how that works. They have figured out that's what fixes it. No one is born with eternal immunity. No one. None is righteous. Not one. When I sit and share the faith with people, I'll say if I took a 10-gallon bucket of water and it's pure, crystal clear water, promise you it's from a spring, absolutely nothing in it. And I take a little vial of poison. I said, I drop one drop of poison in that bucket. Are you going to drink it? Absolutely not. If I pour the whole jar in there, will you drink it? Absolutely not. It doesn't matter how much poison's in there. You ain't touching it if it's got poison in it, right? You say, well, but my goodness dilutes the poison. Whatever. God looks down and says, poison. You say, but look at all the good water. Poison. But then he takes his little vial and drops some blood in there, and bam, you got pure water, living water, just like that. You say, you're crazy. What are you talking about? Why do people read this stuff in the Bible? This is lunacy. You know why? Because it works. You say, well, I don't believe it. Exactly. And that is your problem. Go to Hebrews chapter 9. Just a few more verses and we're done. Now, without getting into a lot of technicalities, let me just try to explain it this way. There is stuff in heaven, and there has been stuff here on earth that mirrors that, but it's not the stuff in heaven. So like in heaven, there's a temple. On earth, a temple was built. It was a temporary temple, but it's not the real deal. So on the earth, when there was a temple here, a holy place, a holy of holies, once a year the high priest would go in, sacrifice, blood was used. They'd go in the holy of holies, make atonement for the people's sins, but it had to be done over and over and over, year after year. That temple is gone. The foundations of it still there. According to the scriptures, it'll be rebuilt in some format. But the real, real deal is in heaven. But what used to go on with a high priest on the earth making these sacrifices, Yom Kippur, you ever hear these things, Day of Atonement, all that going on. What Jesus did once and for all is say, okay, I am going down there. I'll be born of a virgin. I will live a sinless life. I will die on the cross. I will shed my blood. And the blood, by the way, was not sprinkled in the Holy of Holies on the planet. The veil was rent in that place. That was exposed. God says, I'm not here anymore. This is not the place. The blood had then been applied in heaven in the real Holy of Holies before God himself, an atonement. The price was paid once and for all, not every year, not ever again. One payment, done, over, finished, you're good. So when you say, I believe all that, what you're saying is, God, I will accept that payment for my sin. I'm in on the deal. Where do I sign up? How simple is that? You say, but I don't believe that. I can't trust in God. I can't trust in Jesus. I can't trust in his blood. I think that's the craziest story I ever heard. Let me tell you something. If you don't die first, you're going to run out of time. And sooner or later, it's going to squeeze you, squeeze you, squeeze you, unless your old heart just gets completely hard and you go, whatever, I don't need this. If you hear his voice at all, respond. If you have an unexplainable something going on in your heart and in your mind where you feel like it is God himself drawing you to himself, then say, yes, Lord. If that's all you can get out, I accept, I am in, I can't explain all this, but this is what I know I need to do. I sense it is you. I believe. I trust you. Because the farther you get away from this, the longer you say no, the easier it is to say no. Hebrews chapter 9. Now, in the context of those two parallel worlds. Verse 1, then indeed, even the first covenant had ordinances of divine service in the earthly sanctuary, for a tabernacle was prepared, the first part in which was the lampstand, the table, he gives all the stuff that's furnished with, which is called the sanctuary. Behind the second veil, the part of the tabernacle which is called the holiest of all, which had the golden censer and the ark of the covenant overlaid on all sides with gold, in which were the golden pot that had the manna, Aaron's rod that budded, and the tablets of the covenant. And above it were the cherubim of glory overshadowing the mercy seat. Of these things we cannot now speak in detail. Now when these things had been thus prepared, the priest always went into the first part of the tabernacle performing the services. But into the second part, the high priest went alone once a year, not without blood. He wouldn't dare go in there without blood, which he offered for himself, because he too was a sinner, and for the people's sin committed in ignorance. The Holy Spirit indicating this, that the way into the holiest of all was not yet made manifest while the first tabernacle was still standing. It was symbolic for the present time in which both gifts and sacrifices are offered, which cannot make him who performed the service perfect in regard to the conscience, concerned only with food and drink, various washings and fleshly ordinances imposed until the time of Reformation. But Christ came as high priest of the good things to come with the greater and more perfect tabernacle, not made with hands, that is, not of this creation. Not with the blood of goats and calves, but with his own blood he entered the most holy place once for all, having obtained eternal redemption. For if the blood of bulls and goats and the ashes of a heifer sprinkling the unclean sanctifies for the purifying of the flesh, how much more shall the blood of Christ, who through the eternal Spirit offered himself without spot to God, cleanse your conscience from dead works to serve the living God? You want a clean conscience? Get it washed in the blood. I got plenty of stuff that if you said, well, I heard you did this back in 70, whatever, 80, whatever, 90, whatever, yesterday, whatever. You know what? Once I get some blood applied to it, clear conscience. Am I sorry? I should be. But I don't go around. I used to go around with my conscience just eating me alive, so afraid God hadn't forgiven me, couldn't forgive myself. You say, well, I don't get all this blood thing. You better get you some anyway. You tired of a guilty conscience? Stop sinning for one. But if you haven't found a remedy for that, I got one for that. It's Jesus. The remedy for the guilty conscience is Jesus, his blood. You try to find something else, it ain't going to work. I'm okay with people going to counseling, but you better get you some Jesus. Counseling can help, but it ain't going to fix what needs to be fixed. Only his way is it going to be fixed the right way. And for this reason, he is the mediator of the new covenant by means of death for the redemption of the transgressions under the first covenant, that those who are called may receive the promise of the eternal inheritance. For where there is a testament, and this is basically just a will, there must also of necessity be the death of the testator. For a testament is in force after men are dead, since it has no power at all while the testator lives. Therefore, not even the first covenant was dedicated without blood. For when Moses had spoken every precept to all the people, according to the law, he took the blood of calves and goats with water, scarlet wool, and hyssop, and sprinkled both the book itself and all the people. Notice all the people. Saying, this is the blood of the covenant which God has commanded you. Then likewise he sprinkled with blood both the tabernacle and all the vessels of the ministry. And according to the law, almost all things are purified with blood, and without shedding of blood there is no remission. Why did Jesus have to come, live a sinless life, die on the cross, and shed his blood? Because his blood is what fixes it. His death, his bloodshed, being applied where it was applied, satisfying God's, the righteous requirement of the law, that is what fixes it. And you say, I'm just having a hard time with that. It doesn't make any sense. And I'm begging you and encouraging you, believe it anyway. Trust in it anyway, even if you can't explain it. And people say, oh, if I can't see it, it doesn't make sense. No one has ever seen electricity and you're still flipping the lights on. You say, oh, but I've seen electricity. No, you haven't. You've seen the effects of electricity. You have never seen electricity, but you still believe in it. Revelation 12, let's go read that one. Revelation 12, verse 7. And war broke out in heaven. Michael and his angels fought with the dragon, and the dragon and his angels fought, but they did not prevail, nor was a place found for them in heaven any longer. So the great dragon was cast out, that serpent of old called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world. He was cast to the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. Then I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, now salvation and strength in the kingdom of our God and the power of his Christ have come. For the accuser of our brethren, who accused them before our God day and night, has been cast down. And then look at this next verse, 11. And they overcame him by what? By the blood of the Lamb, by the word of their testimony, and they did not love their lives to the death. You're going to overcome death. You're going to overcome sin. You're going to overcome the grave. You're going to overcome everything you need to overcome. You will overcome it by the blood of the Lamb.
We'll get back to Richard in a moment to close out today's talk. But first, I want to share something about our program. Our mission is actually very simple, to take the planet. So it's our prayer that these daily talks from Richard aren't something you only hear and enjoy, but that they inspire you to share with others. Together, we can do this. The message of the gospel is something everyone needs to hear, and that's why it's such a priority to us. So join us in this important mission. Call us at 855-6-RICHARD to say you're in. Or you can get on board with us through our website, richardellistalks.com. Well, here's Richard with some closing thoughts for us.
Now let me tell you how practically this applies to me. I am in situations sometimes where I sense evil around me. I'm with people or something's wrong, something's up, and I know I'm under attack. Let me just give you a very, very simple thing to pray. In that moment, and where this comes from, the scripture itself, what I was taught as a kid, I say something like this, Father, I ask you to cover me in your blood, because if there is anything that repulses Satan and the demons of hell, it is the blood of the Lamb. If you go read the story in the Old Testament, in the Passover, when the angel of death came over, why did he pass over? Because the blood was put on the doorpost of that house. They were marked. I want to be marked. And there is power in the blood. There is power in being washed in the blood and covered in that blood. You say, well, that's the silliest thing that I've ever heard of. You know what? Not till you try it. You want some protection? Hair of the dog may help your hangover, but nothing but the blood of the lamb is going to fix what's ailing you.
You've been listening to Richard Ellis Talks. We really appreciate that you've spent this time with us, but we want to keep the conversation going with you. A couple of ways you can connect with us is by giving us a call anytime at 855-6-RICHARD. That's 855-6-RICHARD. Another way is through our website, richardellistalks.com. You can email us, sign up to get the daily talk sent to your phone each day, right on the prayer wall where we can pray for you, or even stay in touch through our Facebook page at Talk with Richard. We love bringing you the program every day, but it means even more to us when you let us know how the program has helped you. So call 855-6-RICHARD or connect with us at our website, richardellistalks.com. Finally, if you enjoy the program, let us know by your generous support. It would really mean a lot to us. richardellistalks.com. So until next time, have a great day, and thank you for listening to Richard Ellis Talks.